Chapter 9. Asymmetry. "You see, Princess Xian, we cannot defend all the towns and villages," General Kanan Baltaga said. "We must begin moving the people to larger cities, especially Lan Mai. This will be our stronghold." "She is right, Your Highness," a man in military regalia agreed. His starched red uniform and gold epaulets marked him as a Gelkin general. "There is no way to safeguard the populace."
"For how long? How long do we empty the countryside and force our people to live in the overcrowded cities?" Princess Xian asked.
She turned from the planning table, which was spread with maps marked with the locations of Gelkin troops, and began a slow circuit of the room, fixing her attention to the portraits that hung on the wall encircling the war council.
10 days? A season? 5 winters? With farmers away from their fields, the land will lie fallow, and any crops already planted will rot or feed our enemies. Worse yet, how will the cities feed so many refugees? Where would this food come from if the farmers are beggaring themselves in the streets?"
"There will be hardship, Princess," General Baltaga said. She spread a pudgy ringed hand across the map of Gelk. "But these lands are all battlefields and should be treated as such. That Kadrin demon and his airships can arrive anywhere at any time."
"Yes, but will he? Here he will find his nemesis reborn in our crypts. Even now, Grand Sorcerer Jinzan Fair dons the mantle once worn by Lorimar. Counselor Fair even has that staff of his, a boon Lorimar did not. The demon cannot be certain of his power. That uncertainty makes me wonder whether he would rather parley with us than invade. Let him think us like the dragons. Let him fear our power within our own lair."
"Princess, do you read Kadrin well?" General Baltaga asked, her eyes downcast. The question bordered on the disrespectful.
"Of course," Princess Xian said. "I was tutored by the finest sages in Gelk."
She pursed her lips, gracing the Magrin counselor with an expectant glare. "If a copy can be found, I believe that reading The Diplomacy of Fire and Steel would change your mind." "Let nobody live after they try to kill you," General Baltaga said. She shook her head.
"I wish I could believe he would let it pass, but Gelk supplied sorcerers for the war and even a few troops. You have offered violence. It is only a matter of time now."
There was a clamoring of guards outside. Raised voices came muddled through the chamber door, and the assembled generals and Princess Xian stopped their deliberations. There was a knock before the outer door opened.
"Your Highness, forgive the intrusion. She insisted on..."
Naka Fair pushed her way past the guard.
"Why am I being kept from seeing my husband?"
Only one pair of eyes would meet Naka's gaze.
"He is needed," Princess Xian answered. "The comforts of flesh and family will distract him. His mind is set upon a task, and it is a gruesome path he takes to reach it."
"I want to see him," Naka insisted. She crossed her arms, attempting to stare down the princess. Xian's eyes never faltered.
"No."
"I..." Naka began. The princess raised a warning hand. Her jaw muscles clenched. Naka's Magrin habit of speaking her mind had reached its limit.
"I would like to think of you as a friend, Naka Fair. For your own sake, you would do better to think of Counselor Jinzan as you last parted with him. It would cause you both pain to see one another right now."
"What hour is it?"
Jinzan asked, rubbing his eyes. The crypts of Lorimar were a hive of sorcerers now that word had spread of Jinzan's successorship. Whereas he started with 2 acolytes at his command, he now had 20 sorcerers, only 5 of whom were quite as disturbing to be around as his first 2. The eyeless ones were true believers, followers in Lorimar's ways from bits and pieces they had scraped together. The rest were more typical Gelkin sorcerers, fey and weird by Magrin or Kadrin standards, but human and alive to all appearances.
"It is early once more, Grand Necromancer," Nikani answered.
She was his favorite of the new ones. She was round-shouldered and flat-faced, not comely in the least, but she reminded him of a Keshi sailor that Denric had known, one of the few women he had ever sailed with. Atop that, she had a sense of humor
something the others either lacked or feared to display in his presence.
"I think I really do need to sleep," Jinzan complained. "A bit would harm nothing."
"I agree. We can't have that. We need you harming things, else this effort is all wasted," Nikani joked. "How about I go get you a piglet?"
Jinzan squeezed his eyes shut and leaned his head down to rest in the palm of his hand, his elbow propped upon his writing desk.
"Bring it in cooked. I am famished."
"No," a voice said from behind him. "No sleep, no food. Lorimar's way."
"Choju, I am not Lorimar," Jinzan protested. He heard the whine in his own voice and cringed a little.
"They are breaking me."
"Not yet, not yet." Choju trailed off, leaving a long, silent pause among them.
"Shall I bring that piglet?" Nikani asked again.
Jinzan sighed. Fatigue and hunger, imaginary though they might be, had worn down his objections.
"Yes."
The forest canopy overhead was just sparse enough for moonlight to peek through. The sounds of the rest of the company were dying down as everyone, save the unfortunate guards, settled in for the night. There were 6, 3 pairs traipsing about from the clearing where the motley battalion had made camp, and into the dense forest. They each carried a spear. There were nearly 60 of them in total. Stragglers, survivors, deserters brought back into some semblance of the military. 3 striped cats they had among them, as well as 8 horses and a pair of pack mules. It was a waiting game, to see whether they could hide away long enough for peace to save them from the wrath of the merciless Kadran airships.
"Gut me, this seems familiar," Todd said once they were out of earshot.
"Yeah, not a no good way neither," Jodul agreed.
They pushed their way through underbrush, looking for a spot that was light enough to play dice but with cover enough to hide in.
"You ever wonder if they can see it in us? You know, like all them sorcerers and whatnot, with sources?" Todd asked.
"See what in us?"
"I don't know, something that says we ought to be guarding things. First thing seems to pop into a fella's mind when he sees us is, 'You fellas stand there and don't let no one in,'" Todd said.
"Dunno, maybe."
The two of them found a spot that they both agreed upon. Todd sat down and settled in, while Jodul pushed leaves aside and prodded at the decomposing muck of the forest floor.
"What you looking for?" Todd asked.
"Ah, silly thought,"
Jodul said, rattling a pair of dice in his free hand.
"Just thinking maybe I'd find my old ones just lying about."
"We was nowhere near here," Todd said. "We just passed into the trees, coming from the north. Last time we was south and east going in."
"No, we went in north and west, I think."
"Yeah, from the south and east, that's what I said."
Jodul gave Todd a puzzled look.
"Why's you said it backward, then?"
Todd shrugged.
"Either way, back in Kelvi again, eh?"
"Yeah. Gut me, this is giving me the shivers."
There was a smell rising from the little corpse, an odd co-mixture of barnyard filth and acrid chemicals. The piglet's source had awakened Jinzan as he devoured it. Its blood had been collected in a wooden bowl. The silver tray in which the corpse lay was spattered with stray flecks and puddles of blood, and the concoction that Choju had given Jinzan to replace the creature's blood. A faded diagram, inscribed on parchment older than the crypt, hung in the air above the tray. It was at such a height that Jinzan could comfortably refer to it often. In exacting detail, it showed the musculature of the pig, its ligaments and tendons, and the interplay of its bones. Jinzan had cut away much of the skin which made the piglet look like the diagram, though not delineated so clearly. Jinzan reached within the body with a pair of minuscule tongs that he held pinched between his fingers. Once he had hold of the particular tendon he wished, Jinzan gave it a tug and watched the piglet's leg twitch.
"Good, my lord. Now with ether, same tendon," Choju said.
Though merely an acolyte, his understanding of the subject matter still made him an invaluable teacher. He never slept, never ate, and had all the manners of a jailer.
Jinzan reached out using the Gelkin technique which Loramar had devised. He fed the ether into the creature's body, into the muscle, using Choju's potion as a guide through the piglet's veins and arteries. The leg twitched. A bit more ether and it stretched out. Jinzan withdrew his power and the leg sagged back like a weary spring.
"We have not the luxury of time, my lord. Tomorrow I will make sure a full beast is ready for you.
We may have to take your practice out of doors," Choju said with a smile.
He stood from his stool and without another word, left the heir of Loramar to his own amusements.
"I could sleep,"
Jinzan made to rub his aching eyes, but remembered the fluid and mucus that stained his hands. He worked two fingers against his thumb, feeling the viscous sludge between them. There was no disgust. His stomach still hungered, but he ignored it. Jinzan drifted his vision into the ether. A lick of ether, a twitch of muscle, a tendril connected back to Jinzan, each tug of his mind causing the piglet's flesh to jerk in spasm. He added another tendril. It burrowed its way into another leg, then another, then the last. He played about, tugging this way and that, the corpse convulsing under his incompetent direction. As the tendrils branched, he was able to reach down to the secondary sinews, controlling smaller, more subtle muscles. A bit of magic levitated the little corpse and set it on its feet on the tray. Buoyed just enough to balance it, Jinzan worked the legs. The dripping creature that could no longer be properly called a piglet lurched forward. Jinzan scrambled from his chair as the undead puppet stumbled out of the tray and knocked the mess into his lap. Stacks of manuscripts 100 autumns old were splashed and dripped upon and scattered under tiny splintered hooves. Jinzan laughed. He lifted the thing and set it upon the floor where it could cause less havoc, and walked along behind it, still keeping it upright by means of his own Kadrin-taught magic, though he used Loramar's to propel it. He had the incongruous recollection of his own children as babes, and how they would grab hold of his fingers, one to each hand, and use them to walk when their own tiny legs were too clumsy. Jinzan followed it around Loramar's catacombs, accepting congratulations, laughter, and praise from the gathered sorcerers who had all answered Princess Xian's call. Jinzan did not know how much later it was. Getting clear answers about the time from Choju and Aeolin, his primary attendants, was maddening work. Half his time was spent buried in books and sheaves of notes written in scribbled Gelkin. The other half was spent putting the entombed secrets of Loramar's work into practice. He had stopped asking for food. The preparation of his subjects was sustaining him sufficiently. Meals of ether did not satisfy the stomach, but after a time, the gnawing feeling became as a trickling brook or the chirping of morning birds. He ignored it, but the lack of sleep was persistent in its torments.
"Denric, what are you about?"
Jinzan had an awareness of Denric's memories, even as they formed unwatched while Jinzan kept awake. The constant influx of new knowledge into his brain overshadowed the trivialities of Denric's daily life aboard the Fair Trader. With Mr. Tanner gone, the ship was even more mundane by comparison to Jinzan's adventures within the moldering pages. To his repertoire he had added a snake and a chicken, both strangely different from the pig. The most important addition was his latest work, a monkey the size of a goblin. He had not needed Choju to tell him that a monkey was built closely to a man. He got the monkey to walk and to grasp and to beat upon the table with its fists. He did not need to pull each muscle in series. He had discovered perhaps Loramar's most important revelation. The source of the monkey had been sucked dry, the manner of its demise. That had left it well intact, enough so that it could be used as a temporary vessel. The source and brain in concert rule the body. Though an intact brain makes it easier, the source can move the limbs on its own. Jinzan constructed a river in reverse. It began at his own source and flowed upstream, forming major tributaries, then smaller rivers and brooks that wound through the creature's body. Instead of leaving the whole system of ether lashed to his own source, he transplanted it to the resuscitated source of the deceased monkey. The monkey ran like a Tikalish water clock. It would need to be refilled, but so long as it was supplied with ether, it would persist at whatever task it was given. Lorimar had commanded legions of men and beasts by such means.
"Counselor Jinzan Fair," an unfamiliar voice called out, surprising him.
Jinzan had begun putting names to the voices of his new followers, but this voice was not one of theirs.
"Enter," Jinzan called out, coughing.
His lungs were more used to the congested air of the crypts than to the exertion of raising his voice.
"Counselor, Princess Xian awaits you above. She will not descend and requires your presence."
The man before him in Gelkin formal wear could have been an ambassador by his age and bearing, or a messenger reserved for choice occasions. Jinzan fought back an inclination to send the man away.
"Xian watches my wives and children. She gives me shelter. I must relent."
"Very well. Lead me."
"Counselor Jinzan,"
Princess Xian greeted him. Her features were stony. She did not meet his eye as she had on previous meetings. She sat in a painted chair held aloft by four girls of barely flowered age, whose magic held it up. Hers or the girls, he did not bother to examine. They were surrounded by guards and attendants.
"Princess," Jinzan replied, bowing his head slightly.
"You have a guest,"
Princess Xian said. "He was sufficiently unusual and persuasive enough that I felt it worth interrupting your studies."
"Who is he?" Jinzan asked.
"He said you would know him by the phrase, 'I have come with newses,'"
Princess Xian quoted, speaking the latter in accordion. Jinzan smiled. "His name is Tureg.
Yal Tureg. He is the best sailor I know. Where can I find him?"
"We shall discuss that matter once you have bathed, groomed yourself, and had a change of attire. I shall, in the meantime, have a cross word with your keepers of late,"
Princess Xian said.
"Is my appearance so offensive, Princess?" Jinzan asked.
"The room you will be provided will have a mirror. See for yourself. I must warn you, you will be allowed no contact with your family. I will not subject them to seeing you in this state."
Jinzan marveled. A stranger looked back at him from the mirrored glass. His hair stuck together in greasy clumps. His skin was ashen. His cheeks were hollowed like an urchin's. The eyes were the startling change. They sank within his skull, retreating from the world of life, it seemed. They were rimmed in a red he had never seen upon a drunkard's morning eyes, and the flesh around them was swollen and dark. When he stripped to enter his bath, he noticed for the first time the change in his body as well. His skin was stretched tight over every bone, and the few muscles he still had. It was pale, except on his hands, which were blood-stained. He shivered, though whether it was at his appearance or the sudden exposure of sheltered flesh to the breeze, he could not say. He dropped into the steaming water. An hour later he still soaked, relishing the human comfort that he had been well on his way to forgetting. He had brought a small mirror and a razor to where he bathed, and used it to shave off the haphazard stubble from his face. When neither soap nor comb could remedy his hair, he shaved his scalp bare as well. He jumped when the door opened unannounced. Wide-eyed, he watched Princess Xian enter with neither guard nor advisor in tow. There was also no Tureg.
"Get out of that bath immediately. I told you to make yourself presentable, not lie there soaking," Princess Xian ordered.
She was looking directly at him. Jinzan was three times married and had been unclad in front of many other women in his lifetime, but he found himself unable to lift himself from the water's protective covering in front of Xian.
"Princess, if you would..."
"Now!"
Jinzan scrambled to his feet, water pouring off him in tiny waterfalls. He turned away from her to shield his more private regions, twisting his neck to look for where his fresh clothing was kept. Princess Xian stalked over to the suite's lone bed and snatched up the robes that lay there. She nearly handed them to Jinzan but pulled away at the last moment.
"Dry yourself first," she ordered.
Jinzan was skilled enough to dry himself with ether. A cocoon of heat surrounded him, sucking air past him as it rose. Jinzan kept his back turned to the princess as he did so, realizing only too late that the mirror ensured she had any view of him she wished. He finished quickly and took the proffered clothing when it was handed to him.
"I may have fancied you when we first met, Jinzan, but I think you have cured me of that."
Jinzan did not know how to reply. He finished dressing while she watched as if he were a gawking curiosity. At a gesture from the princess, the door opened. Jinzan smiled when he saw his old friend enter.
"Jinzan, my good friend," Tureg called.
As a guard closed the door behind him, Tureg spread his arms wide in greeting, but then pulled up short. He had briefly given the impression he might hug Jinzan.
"Good to see you as well, old friend," Jinzan replied in a more reserved manner.
"Counselor, are you all right? You look unwell."
"You should have seen him a short while ago. I felt like I dug him from his own tomb," Princess Xian said.
"You look well, at least, Miss..."
Jinzan caught himself in an old habit, but stopped short. "Tureg?"
"Captain, I think we may speak before the princess," Tureg said.
"Indeed," Princess Xian agreed. "Captain Tureg and I enjoyed a nice conversation in your extended absence."
"She is a princess in Kesh as well, Captain," Tureg explained. "We may be able to offer help to one another."
"Stalyart, you continue to amaze me," Jinzan said. "Princess, this half-season so close at hand. I never knew."
"It seems we two keep our cards face down, rarely peeking," Princess Xian said. "To call me princess might be to exaggerate, but I have influence and title. I think we need to take this fight to the other side if we hope to win. Vaedris appears lost unless you can truly replace Lorimar. This Kyrus fellow I hear tell of. Now he just might be able to bring us a new sunrise. It has been so gloomy here of late."
"What do you propose?" Jinzan asked.
"You put my dogs on the scent. I will arrange them for your use,"